Good evening, everyone. It is Wednesday night.
Yes.
It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock. That thing just snuck up on me. It's 7 o'clock. We're ready to get going, and this is the time when we focus our attention for 1 hour exactly, and no more, on the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. Okay, and after the hour is up, you can let your attention do what it normally does, which is, no, don't tell us, please. We don't want to know, and we don't want to go there either. Some of us have seen what's in that trap. Anyway, so last time we finished somewhere. Last time what we were doing is we're working our way through the various chambers. And the reason that we're working our way through the chambers in a linear order is that it gives us an opportunity to focus on specific places in the labyrinth that we could rest our attention on for the moment together. And then for me, as I've said from day one, is how to then to translate that into a pragmatic method. How does the ABD relate to my life today, right? Isn't that what we're trying to do? And so we've been working, this is our 20, what week are we in? 28, something like
28.
That. Goodness gracious. And we've been working, we've spent 28 weeks on the first portion of this book. The reason is because the portion, this book is a remarkable guide to the life of the voyager. And we tend to think of ourselves as, I'm just this guy sitting in the chair talking to you. And I am, because that's the opportunity I have for a few brief moments while I'm on this planet. And, you know, everybody says when they die, says, oh gosh, it went so fast. Well, why aren't we saying that today? It's going fast already. There's all these websites now where you can put your name in there and it'll tell you how much longer you have to live. I was with a client the other day and we were talking about certain estate things, and he's 70, and he said that, you know, we just got into how much is enough and stuff like that, and then he says, well, you know, it's like, and how, you know, how much longer I'm going to live? And I told him, I said, you're going to live about 14 more years. And he didn't want to hear that particularly, but I said, my source is the Social Security website that says the average age for a American male is about 84. And I said, I have a couple more years in that, that's it. But it was a phrase that he didn't want in the space at the time when we were doing that. Guy's got some bucks, but he goes, you know, oh, you just never know if it's enough. And I didn't comment on that because it's his valuation. But the point is that there are actuarial tables, and they say that's the amount of time you have left. And they do it because they look at the data that's going on. So far, how many people are on the planet today, Ivan? Plus or minus a billion.
Yeah,
he doesn't know how many people on the planet he lives on.
7 billion.
It is about 7 billion.
Yeah, I think that China is a billion.
Just 7 billion is the rough approximation. And it's growing at about, you know, 100,000 a day, something like that. And you know, and maybe there's been 5 billion people that have lived before now. 10 billion, I don't care. Thus far, all of them have died. Right?
Yes. As far as we know.
And that would mean that there are a lot of new souls here too, David.
Well, you know, that's a theoretical question I've had is, why are there more people today than there were, you know, 10,000 years ago.
Is it the case that there are more people alive now than all of the past population?
No, that's not what he's saying, but there's more people alive today than ever been alive.
At one time,
That's very likely as many alive today as have lived on the planet.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
And I've gotten various answers like people want to incarnate into this planet because this planet has the unique opportunity of a particular type of evolution. So if we want to go there, that people want to, because there's a unique opportunity on this planet. Gosh, what if that was true? If it was true, then that means that there is a unique opportunity for us as individuals and for the very, very, very few people that are here right now. How many people are online at the moment? Does it look like 10? 14 people online, and there's, you know, 6-7 people here. That's it for this gathering tonight. There are other people doing good work. I'm not trying to say that. This isn't the only work that's happening on the planet. But this is work that's happening on the planet. There is other work going on, and it is happening, but the number of people that are working on it is a fraction of a percentage. And it looks like it'll probably be like that for the foreseeable future. Even when it was dictated that we must be spiritual, for instance, during the Middle Ages, you didn't have a choice. You were Catholic, and you had to do everything that's in the Western canon. In the Eastern canon, you had to be something else. And you can see, you know, you can see the differences, for instance, in the Japanese culture. It's more simple for them to consider the concept of reincarnation. It's more part of their everyday life. It is not in ours. It is not. But we as individuals, I take it to the next level. I don't take it to the level that, you know, this is cool and groovy and we're doing good spiritual work. I say, at some point, once you begin to recognize the fact that you are a voyager and that you begin to discern the fact that there are two electrical bodies that inhabit the being that you come here with, and one is the human biological machine and the other one is the essential self, when you recognize that, you have a burden on your hands. And you have a burden, and that burden is to do something with it. You've been given gold. This particular teacher happens to be named E.J. Gold. But we've been given the consciousness of discernment so that we understand that we are a voyager. And if we are a voyager, we are tipping our hats at the angelic realm, aren't we? Now, when these guys, you know, we say, you know, oh, yeah, it'd be really cool to be an angel, you know? Mm-hmm. Kind of neat, you know, you have wings and all this stuff and cool white robes. But the problem is that at some point you begin to get skilled enough at your ability to recognize the fact that you're a voyager, and you begin to see the fact that you have a post. You understand this idea of post? Yeah, we understand this idea of what a post is. And what it means is that maybe you have a post. Is Pathworld on tonight? Pathworld there? Yeah, I mean, what have you been doing for 17 years in Riverside, California, at this weird hillside? Mm-hmm. She doesn't think it's anything. She's just, you know, some person that comes to, winds up in these groups.
It's just normal.
She says it's normal?
For us?
Well, the normality of it is the thing that I want to draw. It is not normal, because most of us on the planet don't draw a distinction. If you read, once again, chapter 24, Practical Work on Self, you'll see that when you view life as if it were a gourmet meal, and then we have a post, and the post is to do something about what is your job, and to do that job. I was talking to somebody earlier today who was having an illness, and realized that in case if she couldn't take care of that illness, this was a symptomatic thing, this wasn't a profound illness, but it was symptomatic, that if she couldn't, and here's her phrase, if she didn't handle it, then she couldn't serve other people. Isn't that interesting? But that was part of her fabric, is that she had to do that in order to fulfill the post that she was able to fulfill at that time.
And that's so, the same as we have to build up these habits to be able to serve.
So what exactly what Susan is saying is we have to be able to build up our inner habits. And George and I have had this conversation a dozen times. What is the best way to serve others? Let's look at Mother Teresa over there in India. I think she's dead now, but she did all this stuff in India, right? Helped the poor people. And that's societal. Society says that's good work, right? And he says, oh, that's great. That is great. It is great to do that sort of thing. But a different form of work is work on self. Because once you penetrate the idea of your essential self and you actually stand in that position for a little moment, is Nortia online?
Yes.
Once you stand in that position for a moment, you begin to realize that you in fact possess and own an obligation toward it.
Well, and aren't you supposed to put on your own oxygen first, and then you can help others?
When your plane is going down, and those oxygen things fall, you're supposed to put your oxygen on first so you could help your kids or others that may need help. This is exactly what I'm talking about, is that you develop your own skill base, then you can help somebody else in a proper manner, or help others in a proper manner. Many, many, many years ago, in one of my marriages, we won't get into that, my spouse had a Porsche. This is a first level car. I mean, this is like,
it's a sports car. Yeah.
It's a sports car. It's one of the most powerful sports cars on the planet. And in order to operate this vehicle, I had to learn how to drive. I'd been driving for 30 years, but I had to learn how to drive this fine machine. So are you learning to drive this fine machine that you've been given? And it's that form of work that in which we come together and we share one to another. We share as well as we're able. Now let's take a quick look, Ivan, very quick look at Chambers 15 and 16. And I think that these are disturbing chambers in many ways, you know. Do you have the book? Get a copy of the book. Yeah, do you have the phone? Go ahead.
No, I just noticed that before we started the show, there were little comments going around about being offensive, sort of in a joking manner, but it seemed kind of appropriate for the unresponsive guides. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, good. See, they're very moving, these chambers. They move me terrifically when I was reading through them. Now, here's the exercise, and here, once again, is why it's important to do this together. We can sit here and we can read these chambers, right? And maybe you're an experienced Labyrinth reader, Labyrinth Reader Society person, and you've read to others a number of times, and you pick it up and you open up the 15th chamber and go, oh yeah, I remember that. It's really something to read to somebody. That's half of the picture that I'm trying to indicate, maybe a unique opportunity for us, which is to be read to as well. And I got a powerful email from somebody that I haven't answered yet because I'm stunned by it. They were so powerful. But in the email, the individual was talking about the profundity of reading and then being read to. It was like it completed the cycle. And George, you and I have talked many times about this idea of two essential selves recognizing each other, right?
Absolutely.
Can you speak about that and some of the elements that we've shared?
Well, I'll tell you, you might remember that we had a conversation a week ago or so. Gurdjieff actually addresses this our essential self carries as a part of its essential nature and a definite tonality, and so we all bear we all possess a certain tonality of our essence. To the degree that we develop our essence, that tonality carries with it the force of our own beingness to the essence of others. And so to my way of thinking, the value of reading, of doing these readings with one another is that our the developed tonality of our own essence conveys the material of the reading to the essence of another, which
Hang
is
on.
Actually ourself in a different form.
Hang on. What did you just say?
Saying I have a tonality when I do the readings,
and
which is it comes from essence,
and it conveys it to the other essence, right?
It serves as a kind of a vehicle for, you know, in order for us to be communicating our words or traveling through the air with vibrational waves we call sound. Well, as we develop our beingness, the tonality of our essence and our ability to communicate carries with it a certain force that can influence those around us in beneficial ways. Gurdjieff describes this very well in his book, Meetings with Remarkable Men, but that's what we were talking about before.
Everybody that's in this room, I guarantee you, because I know them fairly well, that there's a almost absolute certainty that if they were about, they opened up their books and they started reading the 15th chamber, everybody here, and they were reading it to somebody, they would go, despite these confrontations, I still find myself in a spiraling descent to the macro dimensions towards organic rebirth. Yet I know that it is still possible to achieve liberation. If I am able to resist the urge to run away and hide. In order to read that in what I call the proper way that these individuals would read, they would be in their essential self. They would wake. In a certain way, it forces you into the waking state, right? So if you do that work and you read for another in that way, where are you when that person then starts to read back? Huh? Phones.
Last week, Mark
and Mr. Sierra and I had a chance to read together in Second Life. We read the 15th, 16th, and 17th chamber. And it was at one point, the personalities fell away, and I felt like there were these three archetypal components that were sitting there. It was, you know, timeless and immense. And at another level, there was also something very simple and childlike, you know, listening to someone read. And I thought, oh, I need to have somebody read the whole book to me before I die. I've read for others, but I want somebody to read the whole book to me while I'm still here.
To read the whole book to me, she says, Tamara says. And this just underscores what George is saying, that we are all part of the same absolute in different individuations here, right? Now, these units of individuation wind up, there's a distinction because they wind up carrying different elements that become different posts. As unified as we are in our essential selves and the way manner in which we work, we're all uniquely different, aren't we? And we bring a different character to it. I mean, I look around me right now at the skills and the power that these individuals have, and I'm awed by it, you know, what is brought to the table and the friends that are online at the moment. These are unique individuals. So I take refuge, and I say, it says here, I fight the urge to hide and run away. Okay. What does that mean? That is operable in our daily life all day long, every day. Now let's look at the next sentence. Go ahead and read the next sentence, if you would please, Ivan.
I will not allow my attention to become confused or distracted by anything that seems to be going on.
Okay. This then, and you know, everybody says, gosh, well, how would you possibly use the ABD in your everyday life? Hello? This is so bang on. And theoretically, what we're doing is we're reading to someone out there who has died. That person that died didn't ask us for help, did they? They died. And we're giving them this data. And we're saying to them, I will not allow my attention, that's the instruction to the Voyager, to become confused or distracted.
David, there are comments. When you're
ready. It seems to be going on. Okay, go ahead, Harry, please.
Mark Roach writes, I am also finding that being read to is extraordinarily useful. What George seems to be saying is further validated by EJ's phrase with respect to readings, that every word is a universe.
Okay. Every word is a universe. Okay, excellent, Mark. Thank you. Go ahead.
That's it.
Okay.
Not many comments yet.
So, then it says, then all this stuff happens, okay, and when you're in this particular part of the labyrinth. And says, at the moment, the unresponsive guide of the order of karma will spring from the northern quarter, superimposing its form and visage upon the beloved. I take care not to react to my feelings of fear and dismay. Fear and dismay. Trigger, remember, fear and dismay. I know that I can't be overwhelmed if I recognize this entire event to be a projection of my own consciousness. Okay? If I can recognize that this is a projection of my own consciousness, at won't be swept away into fear and dismay. That's what will come up to defeat me, is fear and dismay. But if you recognize that the fear and dismay are not you, and that, as we say in the practical work on self, I can't remember the chapter right now, but I am not that, right? I am not that. But it's part of the orchestration that you are putting out at that moment. So you must recognize it, right? So let's say you have a dismay. Dismay is like, I gave up. I have no hope. It's like a hopelessness, fear and dismay, disappointment. I'm just about defeated. To give up, and you know how we are, and I might as well give up, you know. That's all there is to it. I'll give up. That's dismay, because there is no hope. So if dismay is upon your doorstep, all that is a trigger. That's a trigger to remind you at that point that you're in this chamber. Mm-hmm. Okay? And what's the answer? How do you solve that? Hammer, how do you solve that?
I think part of the clue is just in the next paragraph. This is my own self-teaching experience. If I recognize that it is somehow self-originating, it breaks the identification.
Breaks the identification. When I recognize that it is not me, but you can't, that doesn't mean you avoid it. I don't want it, the New Age thing is, I'm just going to avoid it. No, the key is that it's a hint. It's a good hint. Now you can do the work. So we want to recognize this as an element of our work that's coming up today. Okay? So that's how we work with these various chambers, just skipping ahead, through the teachings I have learned to recognize the guise as pure thought forms emerging automatically from my deep consciousness. No matter how grotesque and terrifying these apparitions, I am able to recognize them as my own, and they quickly lose depth and resolution, dissolving into the formless clear light of the void from where they came, having no further power over me. That doesn't mean they're not there, but they don't have power over me. So when we're sitting here and we recognize these things come up, there's several things we can do. Susan, are you still there?
Yes.
She may have dropped off.
No, I'm here.
Okay. So over the last several weeks, Susan went through a number of things. And then she did the remarkable thing. She started saying, maybe I can discuss this with others. Because my brain doesn't work that good right at the moment. But, you know, I've got all this presence going on. I've got this power going on. I've got this sense of destiny, in a sense, that she has a sense of destiny. So I'm going to just start sharing it and see what happens. And in that bold move, what a great gift that she brought to all of us. The problem is that we don't think we have anything to share that's very important.
Right, and who am I anyway?
And, you know, and then I don't know for how many months, she battled with that one, like, gosh, who am I anyway? I don't know. I consider you pretty much of a home run hitter. You're in a, what I consider truly an advanced class of inner work. Certainly high intermediate. You know, that you are, you're here with a group of individuals slogging away year after year. That's who you are. That's the right. That's what gave you the right to ask and to share. And you expanded yourself, no question, but it also forced the group into a new level of mentation that was quite important. So how does one do what's in the first, that one short sentence? I will not allow my attention to become confused or distracted by anything that seems to be going on. And then it gives you, it literally gives you the formula in the next two paragraphs, what to do. This is my own projection. Some people have chosen incarnations which are very complex and difficult. Okay? And the incarnation that has occurred has strange body types, for instance. It has difficulties. It has limitations. But they're still here. Right?
Well, I have to say, having never been in the hospital in my life, I've now been there three times. And the first time, I was all worked up about it. And I was really bothered by the workers and the whole situation. And I was taking it really seriously. And then now I'm finding that I'm taking my attention off of those things and realizing it is me judging it.
It's your stuff. It's the historical personality that is drawing these conclusions. It's your beliefs. It's those things that you brought to the table.
Right.
But you cut through that.
Well, it's changed.
The Gordian.
It's changed a lot as I realized that it's not real. Or that it's not what I expected. And so there's a certain allowing that has taken place in me.
Right. So there's a certain element that occurred that allow you to get to the point that's called, and that point is called very specifically, I will not allow my attention to become confused. I know that I can't be overwhelmed if I recognize the entire event to be of my own projections. Okay?
So yeah, it's a very much calmer experience now as I go through it and realize it as experience and as my own, what I'm putting into the situation. So I'm finding that interesting.
One of the things that I found is, as human beings, we have a deep sense of a self-pity and feeling of victimization. And for me, this chamber where it talks about, if this is my own self-teaching experience, you know, if it clears that sense of self-pity and victim, you know, feeling victimized, because it, EJ has said, well, you sort of, if you're not going to trust yourself, who are you going to trust? So that that to me is tremendously liberating, that this is self-chosen, self-teaching, self-realizing, self-liberating.
There, so for you, self-pity is a big thing.
Yes.
You have a lot of self-pity and a lot of I am the victim, right?
Right.
Let's look at that for a minute, okay? This is Tamara sharing this about herself. Self-pity has two angles to it. I was in a group once where a guy also was burdened by self-pity, and he didn't even know what it was. And after a while of studying, he says, I had these emotions. I never knew that that was called self-pity. Right? As you begin to name it. Once you name it, that's the first start part of it. You begin to name it, and then it's there, and you are experiencing self-pity. You aren't self-pity. And let's flip it even another flip. What's the other side of, like, being the victim? I am the victim, this is happening to me, right?
I am the creator.
Totally in control, Andy.
I don't mean the opposite.
No, you don't mean the opposite.
So would it not be the creator?
But maybe Susan's starting to get onto it, but if someone thinks they're the victim, then there's this whole thing, like this belief, I can, the powerlessness. I'm always at the effect of the other, we're being told. That's the feeling. I'm at the effect of others. Because that person isn't looking at themselves at that moment, are they? They're not starting with their in. They're just looking how the external is. Is affecting them. It's a reactive stance. But the solution to it, what's the first line of the Bodhisattva vow? The passions of delusion are inexhaustible.
Right.
Then it says, I vow to extinguish them all at once. Mm-hmm. What the heck is that, guys? And the way you do it is by clarity. By coming to a clarity of vision in those areas, you do cut through it all at once. You can't solve the mystery of each, this person's treating me bad, and they did this, and then they did this, and then your friend goes, yeah, that's really bad. Wrong answer. The answer is, you need to be different. And you can stand on the powerful, powerful stance of all you can do is just, I am here and I am, I am the presence. We started this truffle shop up in Nevada City 25 years ago. And we had the first night we opened, we had all these big cases built up. Were you there?
I think I was.
That the night when we did, and there was a big museum show. And so we were going to, that was going to be the first night of the truffle shop. So I'm sitting there, and the truffles hadn't arrived yet. And people are starting to flow and come in, and we had no truffles. Finally, the truffles arrived. I'm sitting there with Joyce, and we're placing the truffles in the cases, right? EJ comes in and starts bitterly complaining about how poorly we did of not getting the truffles there on time and this and that. And my first reaction was to go into some form of a self-pity and, God, yeah, you're right, I'm a little bum. Mm. And then it hit me. My job right then was to put those truffles out. So he carried on and blasted away for a while.
Right.
We just did the work. And I said to Joyce, he's right, keep doing what you're doing. So sometimes you have to self-reflect, like you come back to your presence when that person is doing those things to you. You come back to your presence and start there. And you watch and you can see what is the form that it's taking. Then you have knowledge, because in a certain way you're drawing that form to you. I guarantee you, you are. That specific form, the way it's coming, that specific day, you said, you begged the universe that morning, I'm ready for a new lesson today. Send one to me.
Is this anything like Ghostbusters?
No, it's not like Ghostbusters.
No, the form that the visitation takes, the destructor.
Yeah, the destructor.
So don't think of, oh no.
Yeah, and that is fair.
Yeah, but the point of it is that these chambers are reminding us over and over again, I am creating the manifestation before me. So look really carefully. Look very carefully about you. What happens today? What happened today? What manifestation did you call forth? And I have to appreciate the courage, even though she didn't intend it to be a personal share, and she just says, everybody has self-pity.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually saying, I have self-pity. That works in this thing that I got.
Well, can I comment on that, David?
Please.
I'd like to say, I think it's also possible to say that it's in there, you know, that every one of these, I think it's called the skandhas in part of this book, or in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, that there are these archetypes that are woven together that make up the projections of consciousness. And I, you know, at the risk of, it's getting kind of far into this hour, at the risk of opening up a major can of worms, I have this slight fixation on something about these chambers where, you know, the journey, the way this journey is presented, you read to a voyager, it's a map, and you know, it's a guidance and a map of the territory, you know, it's the instructions. And so everybody may be different, even as George is saying, everybody, even in the essence, in the essential self, everybody may have a different tonality. But there's this journey is apparently archetypal. You know, it's laid
correct.
Out. It's like this is what you encounter in these chambers. So you mentioned something about like the New Age outlook. You know, there's this fairly widespread belief system like that, you know, because everything in life is in some part my projection, like Susan was saying about the hospital, like,
I'm
so afraid of the hospital or whatever. It's a projection. So, you know, like if a monster is coming after me, I can just transform that monster, you know, into a Muppet or something non-threatening because it's my monster and so on. But I think there's a paradox. There's a twist in reading these chambers and this set of instructions where I think at the same time as these are all the self-teaching projections of my psyche, it's not created by me. It's not a specific, like it's not my personality guides. It's not my personal guides like Socrates, Daimon, or something like that. These are archetypal.
Correct. No question about
it. I have to recognize that these occurrences are all projections from my psyche, but there's a kind of a paradox where at the same time it's like an archetypal. They're primal elements of consciousness. So it has an archetypal constitution. Well, what you're calling on the Voyager to do is not to transform like the unresponsive guides you know, my wonderful grandmother or something. Like saying, you know, that all at the end of the tunnel, you know, that my grandmother is going to meet me when I die and so on. It's not actually what we're talking about.
No.
I think there's a, you know, so there's, I'm not sure
so,
what I'm getting at.
Well, what you're getting at is that, well, there's a certain objectivity in the concept of the essential self, okay? But there's a kind of an archetypical consistency in our human personalities too. Yeah, everybody does have self-pity.
Yeah, there was
no
yeah,
question
exactly,
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right.
But maybe it's not as strong for this person as it is for you. The chamber helps us recognize that.
You want to get the phone, yeah. She's, Tamara's talking about recognizing the guides
just hold the
as
phone.
Pure thought forms. You know, so sure, they're my personal thought forms.
Well, it doesn't say that, though.
It
says as pure thought forms. So when you were saying, oh, well, these are my, there's no my in there. And that makes it so much bigger. I mean, we can't.
Well, they are. No, they are. They are objective forms that, in a certain way, we call forth.
See, I'm calling.
We call forth
yeah.
things like fear and dismay.
Yeah, exactly. And they're archetypal. See, I'm caught on the this difficulty for me of whether it's, you know, whether these things are forcing themselves on me, like they have an emptiness, a reality, that I have to go through like a series of chambers. You know,
mm-hmm.
and then the other instruction, which is saying, oh, just recognize that those contents of each one of those chambers, one after another, are your own projections.
But
the projections
they
of your
are
deep,
your own projections
of your deep psyche, of something.
So
about
what
you.
But they're like, but it goes on to say, it's like race upon the face of the beloved. It's a veil. It's, you know,
just,
because underneath it, it's still the pure, shining. You know, voidness of the void.
Which is
but what I'm trying,
unconditioned.
But what I'm trying to say is that for some reason you called that one forth.
Yes,
yeah.
I interpreted.
And therefore recognize it as such because this particular human incarnation,
mm-hmm.
you called that one forth. So maybe there's work to do there. And if it is, that's giving us an opportunity to do the work. Because we know this, I am not that. If we know that I am not that, and it is there in the chamber, then you have the freedom to work with it. That's all I'm saying. Don't sweep it away with theory, is what I'm kind with. No, no, I'm just
you
saying.
Might be me. That would be
I'm
more
just
like
saying,
me.
Don't sweep it away into the theoretical of, oh, that's just not me. Well, it kind of is you. But it isn't.
Yeah, or the one
go
I was
ahead.
Talking about is sweeping it away with the sentimental. To me, I would call it sentimentality, which is to say, oh, there's, give me the name of a Tibetan. Like this one with all the skulls and dripping blood from the flip flop, you know, all this. And, you know,
it was in the email.
I can just convert that to, you know, that since I'm just projecting that. I'm just going to transform it into something cozy.
Go ahead.
So when I first heard Tamara saying about self-pity and victim, I said, oh, that's me. That's funny. She said exactly what I would say. And then I was trying to see if maybe there is something else that's more specific. So I came up with low self-esteem as another thing. And then I said, is it the same? And then I realized, no, it's different. So... But then I realized after that we talk about I am the creator. I did create it, that low self-esteem, isn't it? Or then I am the creator. I'm not the victim of it.
That's
but
right.
Then, yeah.
It's like there's a hole there. And I say that behind that hole is a great teaching for each of us to learn. So if it's low self-esteem, there's a flip to that, it's the higher. And when you embrace it as something as such, then when you embrace it as such, then you can find the higher. I think that there's something in this thing about I am the victim, which is very different than the low self-esteem, that is a very higher calling too. If you penetrate it, allow yourself to penetrate it and be that person that is, I'm always the victim, I'm always the victim. Just keep saying that and see it. You're going to flip it and you're going to see the post that is in it. The objective post you will find. But if you ignore it and say, I'm not that, that's just my projection, you won't find. If it keeps coming back to you, guess what? The universe is trying to tell you and give you a guidance.
Yeah, I was thinking another way of saying that, David, would be that I might become aware that it's just the soft yellow light is the one I'm attracted to.
That's the lower.
It's the green light. You know, right. But I mean, it's this, what do you call it, prism, this part of the prism, the breakdown of the
radiation.
Yeah, the radiation. This is the one that's attractive to me.
Well, what the clue in the book is that you don't try to deal with it or handle it, as David was saying.
Yeah.
You accept it as it is, not, you don't try to change it.
It says we recognize it as our own.
No. If you embrace it and say, because, and you know, I am not dealing with personality here at all. But, so, if there's this thing about...
That's what I'm talking about.
If Tamara is saying that I am the... If her machine keeps giving the message, I am the victim, I am the victim, I am the victim, and then behind that is probably hidden her job. But if she ignores the fact that that's the message that she's getting, she'll never find it. Like in the thing of low self-esteem, you know, we're not supposed to have low self-esteem, right? That's not what you're supposed to have.
It depends on your outlook in life, but yeah. I just happened to listen to a recording of a talk by E.J. Gold where he said that we want to cultivate low self-esteem. That's what we want.
And one of the reasons for low self-esteem, if you flip it into its power base, it has things to do with, like, this concept I have of dynamic surrender.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. That's a hard post to handle.
So we do have...
It goes back to the pattern. What is the pattern where it says, if I am able to resist the urge to run away and hide... I think each of us have particular patterns of ways we hide, you know, and, you know, self-pity is definitely, or victimization is definitely a pattern that I've used. But the issue is just, you know, not...
Don't run away and hide. There's no
right.
reason to.
Yeah, so, okay, so it's there and then it the identification falls away.
I think there's some comments.
Mm-hmm.
Are you
yes,
ready?
There are.
Go ahead.
You go ahead, Susan.
Okay. Well, there's the first one's from Piaggio. The entire purpose of therapy is to help people move from effect to cause in their experience. If we are
you need to speak more into the mic.
The entire purpose of therapy, is that better?
Yes.
Is to help people move from effect to cause in their experience.
Okay.
If we are a victim of the world, then the world has to show up for therapy with us in order to get it from mistreating us.
Very difficult.
Well said.
Good point, Grant. Go ahead.
Vidir said, in some cases, the best thing for a victim to do is leave, because no matter how much they change it, it doesn't matter. And the last change they have to do is make a compassionate ending.
Very good.
Compassionate.
Ending.
Ending, yeah. Okay.
Tiandra said, perhaps the greatest compassion is in the recognition that we have projected all of what we experience. This is a moment of freedom.
Very good.
Vadir says, yes, some horrible projections you must leave behind. Tiandra says, indeed, and perhaps not be distracted by the nice ones either.
That, there you go. That's what I'm saying, like a soft yellow light. Oh, my gosh.
This is,
but
this,
I like
this
the
is developing the discernment as a voyager. Defining, developing discernment as a voyager. Go ahead, Susan.
Gnostic man, the paradox is there is a different levels of projection by the essential self. There are archetypal levels and more individualized levels.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, yeah.
The one of the things that got me out here from Boulder, from Colorado, was a phrase that EJ used way back when. He said, how can I put myself in a position such that my transformation is a necessity to the work?
Wow.
Put that in the log. Type into the log. Quoting EJ. We're running out of time.
Can I
but
do
I want
the last
to make,
few comments?
If they can go quickly, otherwise we're going to have to skip them. They have to be bang on, though.
Okay. As my father was dying, he became distracted for a while.
Who said it?
This is Melissa Lorca.
Okay.
Because the men with the keys were there for him. This all sounded very familiar.
Okay.
Vadir says, what if you cannot escape the projections? Like wars, it might take more than one lifetime.
Yes, that's correct, Vadir.
As we evolve back to the clear, Silverdale says. And then Gnostic Man, it's not something external forcing the chamber on the essential self, but a deeper level of the essential self. A deeper level of identification that the more individualized level is subsumed within. The particular emotional pattern, such as I am the victim, is a way of blocking awakening and recognition. It requires acceptance and in the sense of neither attracted or repelled.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yes.
Two more quick ones and we're done.
Go ahead.
Simon had a question for Pianjo. How does it look, this dynamic surrender in our daily life, or as an attitude? And then Lost Horizon
I
said...
I can answer that now. I can answer it next week.
And the last one from Lost Horizon, she's wondering, how can I put myself in a position...
That's a quote. He's just typing in the quote that I had indicated.
Okay,
now,
that's what we got.
Thank you. I want to point out two things very quickly and before we end. First of all, just the slight comment that Tamara made about herself generated a lot of important information. All right? Somehow she was able to kind of ask for, I'm not going to say she asked for help, but she put herself out. That part is how we do part of the work here. The second thing is next week we're going to work, we'll focus on 16, which I was hoping to get to tonight, but pay careful attention to 16, particularly about the third paragraph, and it says, I now notice the presence in the chamber of a powerful female force. And we're going to look at what that is and what it means. But for right now, because of the hour, we're going to go ahead and we're going to call it for the night.
Okay.
Very dynamic. Let's continue that. And I really want to thank Tamara for speaking up and sharing a little bit about herself. This is what generates creativity within this very creative group. Okay? We'll try it again with others as well. Thanks for coming tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday.
Night. Good night.